black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm gonna die out here. No one's ever gonna know.
I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. It was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me, and this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better...
Sir?
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you tonight. Going to be doing something a little bit different, but I'll get to that in a moment. I wanted to thank Ron Moorhead. You guys know him from the Sierra Sounds. He sent me his book, The Quantum Bigfoot, and I just want to thank Ron for sending me out the earlier version of it. I'll definitely read it, definitely check it out. So thank you, Ron. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And this week's going to be a little bit different. I hope the members enjoyed the Thursday night unedited audio clip that I played and then Friday night show. Happy Easter. I'm going to change things a little bit for Sunday show. Duke, you guys know Duke. He's been on the show several times. He has a YouTube channel called World Bigfoot Radio. And if you look up Brian Sullivan or World Bigfoot Radio, you'll find it. And he asked if he could interview me, and I thought, oh, this is great. We'll just maybe do I'll play it on my show. You can play it on your show. But it's just mainly us talking about different theories and stuff maybe you don't get to hear so much on the show, behind-the-scenes type of stuff. So I really hope you guys enjoy it tonight. I will see you guys back probably midweek. Got a lot of things coming up this week. But I hope you guys are enjoying your Easter Sunday. Hope you're spending time with family and friends and having a great time. So let's jump into it tonight. Here we go.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of World Bigfoot Radio. Today, we're doing something a little out of the ordinary. We're going to be recording an audio feed for my show, and we're going to be recording audio and video feed for another show, since I'm having a guest on here that's got the technical wizardry to deal with this sort of thing. And I just thought you guys might be interested in having somebody actually interview this person for a change, because he interviews people all the time and nobody ever really talks to him very much. And I'm going to drag him onto some subjects that he doesn't usually cover. So you guys will probably enjoy the show. And with that, let me welcome the head honcho, main man, and creator of the ever popular and incredibly awesome Sasquatch Chronicles program onto little old World Bigfoot Radio. Welcome, Wes. Good to have you, buddy.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks, man. I'm nervous. It's crazy. I was just telling you, I never get nervous doing my own show. I'm pretty cool and calm, but no, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, you're in a little different position that you're usually in. Usually you have to be listening to your guest and figuring out what's the next good question to ask them in case they miss something or they skip some detail along the way, or you think they can, you know, bring a little bit more light to something they're talking about. And so in this case, you know, it's like I'm the one that's going to be asking you all those fun questions. And the one that really intrigues me the most, and I think a lot of people would be interested in this, and I sort of have to give my background on how I feel about this. I'm a little different than some of the fans on Sasquatch Chronicles who really like the show a lot, and to them it's sort of a combination of entertainment and information. And for me, it's been, you know, a combination of both. I've really enjoyed it since the get-go, but I've been involved in this in such a long time. Really, that can't be the main attraction for me to want to listen to it all the time, and it isn't. What I really enjoy about it is that Wes got into this as sort of a public service thing. Like, hey, man, I had this weird encounter with these things. I don't know what the hell they are. There's nobody I can talk to about this. Where do I go with this? And decided it would be a good idea to set up a place where people could share their encounters. And that's what Sasquatch Chronicles has been all the way. Well, of course, that catches my attention because being a, you know, a person that's a Bigfoot investigator interested in all that paranormal cryptid stuff, like to get as much information as I can on it. And there's hardly a better way to do it than to interview people that have had these sort of encounters firsthand. But the other thing that really attracted me to it is that Wes got into this right away at the beginning when he had his first encounter and basically didn't know anything about Bigfoot. He was just trying to pick it up and put it together as fast as he could. And we all got to share that wild ride with him along the way. And to me, that's what really sets Sasquatch Chronicles apart from some of the other shows. And that, you know, Wes is the person that went ahead and did this for, you know, as far as I can tell, the first time, and let everybody kind of come along with him for the ride. So I'd like to just mention that I really appreciate the fact that you had the balls to go ahead and do that, Wes. And there's a lot of other people out there that I'm sure right now would be more than happy to have me say that to you, because if they had the opportunity, they'd say that too.
Well, thanks, man. That means a lot. That means a lot. It's been a tough road, but it's been a fun road, and it's been a fun journey. And you know, it's one of those things to where when you get into this, you're just trying to find answers. And it seems like the more I've gotten into this, I know less and less and less. And it's
you know, after you spend decades and decades trying to solve this whole puzzle, you'll find out that it doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you I had an absolute answer at this point, but no, you just keep getting more information and more and more puzzling things that you have to try and put together and get an answer from. And it's always intriguing. It's always interesting. But are we going to have a final answer? Well, until certain powers that be decide to let us have one, I don't know if we're going to get one. But meanwhile, what we can do is share information. And I know that, speaking of information, that you've gotten a lot of information from all your guests and the researchers that you've talked to along the way. And I'd kind of like to see if we can get you to kind of go through a little timeline. I don't know if you really want to go into your encounter very much, if you want to just give us a quick brush through it and sort of walk us through that. I'm sure that there's some people that would like to hear the basic overall details of it. But what I'm really interested in is when you had your encounter, and especially right after it, what did you think you had seen? What was your take on these beings that you had this encounter with?
Well, my take on it was I thought there were monsters, to be honest with you. I thought there were monsters. And my opinion on it after my encounter was kill them all. Let God figure it out. You know, that's honestly how I felt. And Woody and I would disagree on it, because Woody always, from the start, always felt like there was some sort of paranormal aspect to it. And so him and I would always clash big time on that, because I felt like there wasn't. I will agree with him on a lot of things. It's crazy. You know, two people can have the same encounter and walk away with two completely different perspectives on it. And I found that through interviewing people too. It's the same thing. But with Woody, what was interesting is he thought there was something paranormal to it right off the bat. He was like, there's something not right. They don't move the right way. And so that was kind of my feeling going into it. And I know people listen to the show, and I try to make it a production value on the show. But I'm an amateur at best. That's what people seem to forget that. I know I don't say things the right way sometimes, and sometimes I get beat up all the time for saying interesting instead of interesting. and, you know, just a little, you know, sometimes those people, I'm like, you're listening to the show way too much if you're catching that. But, you know, I'm an amateur at best. And, you know, it's been an interesting road coming out of that encounter and then starting the show. I never anticipated the show being what it is today. Never in my wildest dreams. I remember when we very first started doing the show, we couldn't get anyone to come on. No one would come on the show. No one would share their encounters. And I didn't really want to. I used to fight with the other hosts because I really didn't want to hear from researchers. Right. I wanted to hear from eyewitnesses. I didn't don't tell me what you think after 40 years of research or 20 years of research or whatever. I wanted to hear from the eyewitnesses. I wanted to hear from people who saw what I saw, because I didn't believe in Bigfoot. I thought it was, you know, I was more open to it, I would say, than Woody for the most part, prior to our experience. But I never really gave it that much thought. And Woody was completely the opposite, completely skeptical. He used to make fun of me because prior to our encounter, we would talk about it sometimes when we were out hunting or whatever. And yeah. Woody's like,
"Yeah, you live in that part of the country, so of course it would come up at some point."
Yeah, exactly. You know, and but we never really gave him much thought. And the crazy part is, you know, I had spent so much time out hunting in different areas. I had never seen anything remotely that I wasn't looking either, but I'd never come across anything that I thought, oh yeah, the Sasquatch exists. I'd been out there, and so I can relate when I talk to hunters today or skeptics today when people say they don't believe in this. Listen, I've been all over the place. I get it. I completely get it. Because I felt the same way for the longest time. And so, my attitude's changed. It went from these things are monsters. I still deep down think they're monsters, but I think after talking to so many people, I've come to the conclusion that not every encounter is going to be aggressive. Not every encounter is going to be life-threatening. Not every encounter, you know, they might get up and walk off. They might get scared and run off. People can have non-threatening encounters. And it took me a long time to accept that.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to accept when people would say it looked very human-like. Because what I saw didn't look human-like at all.
Yeah.
And it really bothered me when people would say that, because I'm like, no.
What were you looking at? Because it wasn't what I was looking at, man.
Exactly. Exactly. and that's honestly the way I felt about it for the longest time, because I'm like, well, you didn't see what I saw. I have no clue what you saw. But you get to the point of there's really no I don't have the ego, and I don't think I'm anything special doing the show by any means. I've never felt that way. And I understand how hard it is to come out and talk about your encounter and the ridicule that you get. And so I've always wanted to create kind of a safe place for people to talk about what they saw. The last thing you need is someone interrogating you after you've had an encounter. The last thing you need is someone making fun of you after you've had an encounter. And there's a lot of things, strange things on this planet that people can have encounters with beyond Sasquatch. And it really opened my mind up to the fact of maybe I don't know everything. And even to this day, you know, I talk to people and it's like I had a guy on last week, and we were talking about kept talking to me like I'm some sort of expert. And I'm like, listen, man, no one knows any more than you do. I can give you my opinion, and a lot of my opinion is based off witness testimony. But at the end of the day, I could be wrong. You know,
I'll tell you what, an opinion based off witness testimony is worth a lot more than an opinion that's based on thin air.
Yeah.
That's an opinion that's actually worth listening to. You've got multiple people telling you the same thing. If there's a pattern there, well, you've got pretty good evidence there's a pattern, because you've heard a bunch of these people all telling you the same sort of thing. You know, that's where a lot, at least 90% of our knowledge on Bigfoot has come from, is just witness encounters. There's not a whole lot you can get out there and verify, because they're really damn good at hiding their presence. Unless you know what to look for in the woods, I mean specifically like stick structures, where you're liable to find tracks, things like that, there just isn't any evidence that they're out there. And where they do leave evidence is usually someplace that's difficult to find. You know, they don't just like go put a big marker up by the side of the highway saying, hey, Bigfoot this way, you know. Generally, although I've seen examples where they did that, they don't usually do that. Point I'm trying to make is that, good old John Bindernagel said, it isn't seeing is believing, it's believing is seeing. It's just the opposite. If you believe that they're there and you know what to look for, you're a lot more likely to see one. than if you just randomly stumble into one. But at the same time, you get people every year that randomly see one. And you know, Wes, a lot of these are just, I'm driving home late at night, and I came around this corner, and there was this big furry thing, and I waited until the vehicle got way too close, and then it ran across the road, and I almost had to slam on my brakes, and I was freaking out, and I could see it pretty good, and yeah, it took like 3 steps, and it was across the road. Well, what's that all about? You know damn good and well that if they didn't want to freak somebody out, they could cross the road when there wasn't a car there. Now, I get the impression that Bigfoot has a sense of humor. A lot of people don't take this into account, but I think they have a great sense of humor, and I think they like to screw with humans, to be honest with you. Some of the stuff they do when you put the all these multiple reports of the same sort of thing together, it starts to come up with these patterns that indicate not only that they're intelligent, but that they're playful in some respect, and they have a sense of humor, too. I know somebody that actually heard one lapping at him. Big old belly lap. He was riding through his canyon on a horse, and rocks were falling next to him. And he couldn't figure out where they were coming from. And finally, he looked up to the top of the canyon over 100 feet above him, and there was a big old Sasquatch standing up there dropping rocks on him and the horse. Just little ones. But going, on top of the cliff, laughing at him. You know, he thought it was funny. Oh, drop another rock on him. See if he gets my attention. Nope, he's still not noticing. Drop another one.
Yeah, you hear that. I've heard that, too, from witnesses of them laughing. And I know when I very first got in this, for the longest time, I always thought we were chasing an ape. And I used to say, damn dirty ape. And I can explain the flute player thing if you want me to.
Well, you might as well go into it. Here's an opportunity to clear the air on that whole thing.
Well, I used to think that we were chasing an ape, and now I'm not so sure. And I guess we can go into that in a little bit. But the flute player thing started out. There was a researcher who, and it cracks me up to this day. People still say flute player, but there was a researcher, and this guy was playing a flute. And he was sitting, Paul Graves even gave me crap about this, and I kind of had to explain it to him. But so anyway, this guy has a picture, and he's playing this flute. And in this picture, he has circled 7 Sasquatches sitting around. They weren't really Sasquatches. They were just red circles. But he claimed they were sitting around watching him play the flute. And he would bring them apples, and he claimed that he would hold out the apples, and they would eat right from his hand. And so the term flute player became born at that point, because I'm like, I had just come off my encounter, and it upset me so much when I saw that. I was like, this guy's going to get someone killed. Yeah. These things are nothing to be played around with. They're not toys in the forest. These things will kill you. And so the term flute player was born, and then it takes all sorts of different – people think it means different things, but that's where the term – flute player came from. Somebody had asked me that, and I said, well, it's kind of a long story, but that's where it came from. But I don't really think that anymore. You know, I tend to back off of, you know, and I used to use it as a broad term for anything paranormal or what they call woo, you know, in the Bigfoot world. And so, but I've backed off from using that term because, you know, it's hard to say I don't have one in my garage I'm studying. And then you're bashing someone for believing in this or that, because I don't know at the end of the day. I really don't know. Yeah. And so I've kind of backed off from using that term, even though it's a term I created. But it cracks me up to this day that people still use it, you know.
Well, I think it has some usefulness in connection to the woo. But, yeah, I can understand how that whole thing happened and how it got kind of misconstrued to start with. You know, we were talking about this before we started recording. The difference between the paranormal and the normal is just the difference between what we can readily explain with science and what we can't readily explain with science yet. There's a lot of things that we think of as magical that we could probably at some point find out a scientific explanation for, and at which point it doesn't become magical anymore. Then it's just science because we can explain it. So just for people to think, you know, a lot of this stuff is impossible, well, from a strict physics standpoint, it's going to be pretty difficult to explain. But that doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means we haven't got a good explanation for it yet. And there's some things that are less likely than other things. You know, Bigfoot may have some sort of a method of cloaking. Well, we've talked about that before, too. Even polar bears have sort of a transparent fur, and if they walk in front of something, they sort of pick up the color of it. So they can sort of blend in that way. Well, that's sort of like blending or cloaking, but that's just a totally natural thing. See, just because they can do something and it gets described by one witness a certain way doesn't mean that they're using the right word or that it actually is exactly what it is that they're trying to explain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I tend to disagree with you on that, though. I think there is things that could be explained through like quantum physics. And you and I were talking about Ron Moorhead, and I love Ron to death. And we've never, for the most part, have seen eye to eye in a lot of things until recently. But Ron, the reason why I love Ron so much is he will listen to what you have to say and give you input. And then the way he'll explain something, it's not like cramming it down your throat. He's just saying, right. And so he does a great job at that, to where he doesn't cram things down your throat. And he does such a great job at explaining different things to where you go, oh, okay, well, I could buy into that. You know, some of these other people, the Bigfoot world's a crazy place, man. As you know, it's like a religion. It's like a religious, it's like the Muslims against the Christians, and it's a crazy, crazy place. But, you know, some of the different things, you know, I wonder if it's not demonic or not. And that's the stuff that worries me with some of the stuff I've heard off the air. You know, as you and I were talking, you know, I've done 300 plus shows. Realistically, I've probably talked to 1,500 to 2,000 people, ballpark, maybe more. And you hear different things off the air with people who don't want to come on the air and share it, and they're telling you things, and there's really no gain for it for them to tell you crazy things. Yeah. And they're just wanting to get it off their chest. And so I don't know why I went off on that tangent, but to go back to what you were saying, yeah, some of the things could be explained, but I think when you start going down some of those roads, and maybe it's my religious background, but I start to think more demonic than I do like quantum physics, you know.
Oh, I agree. But I think there's other, you know, like misperception can play a big part in the whole thing. You're watching something standing next to a tree. You look away for a second. You look back. It's gone. It vanished. And they'll tell you that. Well, it just disappeared. Did you look away for a second? Or, well, no, they don't remember doing that. They just know it vanished. Well, the Bigfoot was watching them. The second they looked away, he ducked down and he was out of there. And then, oh, my God, he vanished.
Right.
Or this track line goes out into this field and it just dead ends. There's no more tracks. Well, did you go backtrack? Did you see if he stepped back in a few of his own tracks, got back in the tree line, and then took a big jump to one side or the other, or straight up in a tree? You know, it's the same kind of tricks humans used to use. You don't think a Bigfoot can do that? Give me a break. Come on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think most things can be explained in life in general. Most things can be explained. But there is a small percentage of things that really can't explain. You can't explain.
Right.
And I can go back to my encounter if you want me to, but before I do that, you know, it's as I got into this, one of the, and I've mentioned this before on my show, is one of the things that always bothered me was Gary Wayne and his Genesis 6 conspiracy book. By the way, hands down, one of the best books. I'm not a book guy by any means, but that is hands down one of the coolest books ever. And one of the things he had said to me, we had done a Nephilim show. And I'll give you some of the behind the scenes. I got so much crap for doing the Nephilim show, like you wouldn't believe. Emails like you wouldn't believe, Facebook messages like you wouldn't. Yet it was one of the highest downloaded shows I've ever done. Had nothing to do with Bigfoot. We're just talking about the Nephilim.
Right.
But anyway, Gary Wayne had said something to me when we were doing that show. He said, Wes, don't you find it interesting that Sasquatch is in Russia? It's in China. It's in Australia. It's in Canada. It's in the United States. There's reports of them in Mexico. Yet there's really little evidence that they exist. He said, you know, you got your audio, you got your video, which generally isn't very good. You have your witness testimony, and then you have some physical evidence that they were there. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of evidence that these things exist. And one of the things he said to me, he goes, don't you find it interesting that if you think there's such a cover-up in the United States, is there that same cover-up in Russia?
Is there that same cover-up in China? Is there that same cover-up in Australia? And I didn't have an answer for him.
You know, so I've talked to the Aussie researchers, and they'll tell you, yes, there is that same cover-up going on down there.
Really?
And you know, just to the same extent that we have it, too. There's some of the researchers that have talked to people that have seen one and then had a ranger show up afterwards and talk to them and go, don't talk about this anymore. And be warned away from it. Physical evidence being found later destroyed. I've gotten reports from the Aussie researchers on the same damn thing. So, yes, it is going on a global scale. There are people in other countries that are stopping this. And you're right, there's researchers all over the place. I got a friend in Sweden that's out with a local Bigfoot researcher in Sweden this weekend. So, you know.
But does that make you wonder why? I mean, if we're chasing, let's say, an unknown primate, why such a cover-up?
Yeah, well, because it's not an ape. Oh. If it was just an ape, there wouldn't be any big cover-up. This is, my opinion, it does have to do with the Nephilim. I don't think that they actually are straight-up Nephilim, but I think it has to do with that, and I think it also has to do with the worldwide scientific community using the theory of evolution to prop up everything, and at this point, they've really backed themselves into a corner anthropologically and say that there are no hominins other than us running around right now. There's no two-legged apes currently extant other than humans. And well, if all of a sudden we come up with one that is close to rivaling or in excess of our own intelligence, then do they suddenly become people and have all of our rights? Do they have to have massive amounts of protection? Do they have to rewrite everything in science? Did they evolve at the same time as us? Did they evolve before us? Did they evolve after us? Are they some sort of a hybrid? If they're a hybrid, who created them? So many questions that they don't want to answer and rewrite textbooks for, not to mention the fact that it'll cause the whole Western belief system, which is propped up so rigidly on scientific thought right now, will pretty much crumble, especially if there's any connection to the Nephilim or that sort of old biblical, you know, and especially pre-Diluvian texts talking about what the world was like back then, which is similar to the way the world is right now. They don't want any of that coming out. And if you listen to the guys that were interviewed for the Kandahar Giant, one of them said that flat out. You know, the reason that this is all the people in field, in country, knew about this rumor has gone all over the place, but it wasn't allowed to really leak out, is because, you know, anything that is that tends to buttress up the Bible as a possible fact, they don't want coming out, period. And giants are in the Bible, so therefore giants can't come out.
Well, you said it, not me.
Well, you know, as anybody that listens to me and follows me knows, I'm not somebody walking around saying I've got all the answers either. I don't. There's been a couple times when I've thought that I had the answer and I was dead wrong. So I'm not sure that I have the answer right now. I'm just I just go with the information that I've got. And the more information builds up and the more that I learn about it, you can't necessarily pin down what it is, but you can start getting away with some concepts of what it isn't and throwing those out the window, because evidence is pointing too strongly in opposite directions for it to be, as an example would be, a simple wood ape. Neither one of us believe it's a simple wood ape anymore.
No, I don't believe that for 2 seconds. And you're right. I mean, and I was giving you crap there, but
I know you are. But you good know, job.
It is. It's one of those things to where there's more to the story. And I found this interesting with hopefully I said interesting with the T, so I don't get emails. But anyway, the I found it interesting that when you talk to researchers or people that call themselves researchers, I give them a hard time because they're some of the worst human beings I've ever met in my life. Egomaniacs and very, very small men. And I'll leave it at that. But that's why I generally give researchers a hard time. Not all of them, but you know, that's generally why I give researchers a hard time.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And the fact that
we don't all suck. Just most of us.
Well,
most of us.
It's like,
I agree.
I always tell my audience, you know, if someone's such a great researcher, ask them. Tell me 5 things interesting about Sasquatch that right. No one else knows. And I guarantee 99% of the researchers out there can't tell you. If you've listened to Sasquatch Chronicles, you probably know more than most researchers. Just based on – and that's not giving me props. That's giving witnesses props for coming on the show. But as you look into this subject, if you take it with the mindset, like if I was just in looking at Washington State or the Pacific Northwest, when I talk to a witness, if they say it looked very chimp-like, I could brush it off and say, well, you're not sure what you saw. Or any people on the East Coast, when they say it looked very human-like, I could say, well, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you didn't get a close look at it.
You didn't get a close look at it, yeah. Which is very arrogant to do. But as you start to really start looking into these different states and what people are running into and what they're seeing, and then you take that on a global scale and you look outside of the United States, there's something not right here. There's something going on here and something isn't right. And it has nothing to do with the lumber industry. I don't want to hear the spotted owl nonsense anymore. It has nothing to do with money. Has nothing to do with, well, they would need protection or, you know, PETA would get involved. Has nothing to do with any of that. There's something else going on here with this subject and with this creature. And there's more to the story than what you're getting. There's just more to the story. Yeah. And some of the paranormal stuff that people mention, I'll stop and listen to what people have to say now. As before, I wouldn't. I would just brush it off and go, yeah. Now I'll stop and listen to what someone has, especially if it's something paranormal. And you have to, and people have to do that if you want to look at the whole, the puzzle as a whole. You have to accept everything and just kind of take it and even if you don't want to buy into it, put it in your file cabinet, put it in your mind, in the back of your mind for next time. And that's what I started doing with people who didn't want to come on the air, and they had these, like the two brothers. You were part of that show where we talked about those two brothers and the whole empty vessel thing. And I'm telling you, I talked to those guys for months, and they were completely different guys after that incident. And I don't know, what do you make of that? You know, do you just brush it off and go, well, it's nonsense? I don't think so. I'm telling you, I've talked, and so you, the point I'm trying to make, I'm rambling because it's your show, not mine.
that's okay. Go ahead, Rick.
But you have to, even if you don't buy into what someone's saying, I think it's important to listen to someone. And if nothing else, put it in the back of your mind and save it for next time. The next time you hear something like that. And there's so many odd things. I wish, you know, I would have recorded every conversation I'd ever done and then put it out on a CD. People would be blown. Some of the best encounters you've never heard on the show because people didn't want to come on. And it's frustrating when they don't want to come on. But I get it. You know, it's not it's a fine line you have to walk when you're talking to witnesses, whether they want to come on the show or not. And I'm happy to hear the encounters, whether they want to come on or not. I'd prefer if they did to share it with everyone, but that's not the case sometimes.
No. Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with what they perceive the ridicule factor is going to be. The more bizarre the encounter was, the less likely they are to want to talk about it, because they just figure in their mind there are that much fewer people. They're going to really believe it, pay any attention to it. The rest of them are just going to give me hell about it, you know?
Yeah, and there's encounters, too, where people have agreed to come on the show, and I've not aired it for specific reasons.
Mm-hmm.
More or less for them, not so much me. I had a guy who, I'll tell you real quick, he had an amazing encounter, and I'll tell you why I didn't air it, because I did this guy the biggest favor of his life. He would have been eaten alive. But they were in a bus, and this was back in the 70s. And they kept hearing what sounded like a lion roaring. And, you know, they thought, there's a lion loose. You know, they were all just not really sure what was going on. And this thing had jumped up on top of the hood of this bus and was looking in the big window and looking in at everyone inside this bus. And he said it grinned at him. He goes, but I don't think it was smiling, but it was showing its teeth and it was grinning. And then it jumped off the bus. And he said, when it jumped off the bus, the whole bus like shook. And he goes, I don't think this creature was really that big. He goes, maybe six and a half feet tall. It seemed to be kind of skinny, but when it jumped off the bus kind of shook. And he goes, it looked to cross between a chimpanzee and a person. He goes, that's the only way I can describe it. He goes, it wasn't human, I can tell you that much. But it looked to cross between a chimp and a person. The reason why I didn't air that show is everyone had been smoking weed. And this is, you know, 1970.
Right.
And you and I both know, I've never talked to someone who smoked weed and then had delusions of grandeur of seeing monkeys jumping on buses. I just haven't.
No.
And that's the main reason why I didn't air it. And he was forthcoming. He said, hey, that's why we were all out there. We were all partying. We're all having a good time. And I thought, oh my God, the audience is going to tear this guy apart. But it was a great encounter. It was he had awesome details of the face. He talked about the fingernails of this thing because he was towards the front of the bus when it jumped on it.
Oh, nice. So you got a better look at it.
He got a really good look at it. But it's kind of a funny thing doing a show like I do, because do you air something like that and then have everyone tear this poor guy apart? They're going to say, well, this and that, or, you know, he's been drinking, or he's been smoking weed, or he's... And so it gets to the point where I never tell someone what to say or what not to say on the air. I let them just talk. And he was very forthcoming in it on smoking weed. And I felt... I don't know. That's why I never aired it. But... and so it kind of gets frustrating, because sometimes you get great encounters like that and you're like, should I air that? Should I not air that?
Yeah.
And so it's a fine line you have to walk sometimes with this. Sorry, I don't know why I went off on that tangent.
No, that's okay. I've actually seen an example of the opposite of that, where the two witnesses were sober, but the Bigfoot was drunk. And so I don't think I should have.
Really?
I'm not kidding. It was Michael Cook was on my show, and he talked about an old encounter that two moonshiners had had. They already had their, they were done with the latest batch, and they had put it in containers. I guess they were like mason jars with screw on tops, and they were getting ready to go take it all and haul it away to where they were going to sell it. And they got out there still. Most of it was smashed. There was a drunk as hell Sasquatch laying on the ground. He couldn't figure out how to unscrew the lid, so he'd smash him on a rock and then lick up the booze quick before it all seeped into the ground. And when he saw him come, he tried to whoop at him and went, woo, woo, woo. And they stood there looking at each other, looking at this thing going, what the hell is that? We got to move our steel.
Yeah,
so apparently it finally got its act together enough to realize there were humans there, got alarmed, and kind of staggered off into the woods. And they just, you know, what are you going to do in a situation like that? Sure, you got a gun, but there's this giant drunken monster there. And you're going, what the hell is this thing? Why is it drinking our booze? What's going on here? You know?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I on the show, I'll tell you what's harder than getting a cop to come on the show is getting these guys with these marijuana grow operations on the show.
Oh, God, yeah. They don't have any notoriety.
I've talked to many, many of those guys, especially out in California. And one guy, he was bringing up water from the stream to water his grow operation. And one of the Sasquatches had gotten into his water. He was dumping it in this huge, I don't know, it was some sort of bin he was dumping it in, and the water would run out to all his plants. And he said that he was bringing water back up one day, and he said this half man, half ape thing actually had grabbed the side of where he had all his water in this huge drum, and had it bent, and had the drum actually tipped almost over and had its head down and drinking the water. And he said that thing the drum he used for the water probably weighed, you know, half as much as a car. And he said for this thing to be holding it, tipping it over, drinking out of it. But I've talked to a lot of those guys, and they are almost impossible to get on the air. And I understand why, because of what they're doing. You know, it's hard to explain, well, why are you out in the forest? Why are you out in the middle of nowhere? Yeah. You know, they're not hiking. And that's a frustrating part, because if you bring someone like that on, do you ask them to change their story and say, okay, let's leave the whole pot thing out
Yeah.
Well, let's just go with what you're hiking. But the moment you start doing stuff like that, you got to be really, really careful. Like when someone sends me their encounter, and I'll post stuff to the blog, but I won't put their name in there. And people will be like, oh, the, you know, some of the worst grammar I've ever seen. I don't change someone's story. I just put it up. Right. And I think it's important not to change. What were you out doing? What did you run into? Okay, well, let's go with this because the public's not going to like what you're out doing. And so it gets frustrating sometimes. I've talked to a lot of those guys, a lot of the marijuana grow operation guys, who've seen them, and they have some of the best encounters like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. I mean, again, they're right out in the middle of nowhere where these things are, and I'm sure it's drawing their attention. What are these goofy humans doing out here, you know? Yeah. What's this goofy human doing out here trying to be sneaky in my terrain? This is my turf. What's this stupid human doing out here? I'm going to drink his water and stomp on his plants.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's something that brings me to another point, too. And when we did the show about mountain giants, you mentioned the fact that you had actually had a couple people that had told you stories that sounded like they were probably mountain giants. And again, they wouldn't come on the show and talk about it because it was so out of the ordinary. It was so different from a regular Bigfoot encounter. They just thought everybody would think they're completely full of crap. So why bother coming on the show?
Yeah, and that's frustrating. That's very frustrating. I have talked to two different people. They were both in Alaska, and this is way before you and I ever did the mountain giant show. And both of them had described to me seeing what appeared to be a man as tall as the trees. One guy said he thought it was about 16 to 17 feet tall, this man walking. And he said he was built like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He had red hair. He had a red beard. And he was carrying a like a spear type weapon. And he was going up the mountain. Now, this guy had been hunting his whole life. This was an old man. Probably in his mid-60s. And so he's telling me this story, and it had just happened to him. And I asked him, well, how far away were you from this thing? He goes, oh, I was pretty far. You know, I was a couple hundred yards away. But I could see every detail of this guy. And he goes, I don't know that it was a Sasquatch, because it's not based on what you have on the show. This was more of just a big, tall guy, a big, burly guy. And he was just heading up the mountain, and he goes, I was so terrified, I gave up hunting. And so I heard that, and I was kind of like, eh, I don't know. Well, okay. I just kind of put it in the back of my mind. And then I don't remember if it was 6 months or a year later, I had been contacted by another guy, completely different guy. And he was telling me 3 years prior, he had run into almost identical to what this other guy said. He said it was heading up the mountain. It had red hair, had red beard. And it was just, you know, and so what do you make of that? You know what I mean? For the audience listening, what do you make of that? Here's two separate guys, two separate time frames in the same general area describing the exact same thing. I think one said it was nude and the other guy said it appeared to have like a loincloth on or something like that. But they both described the exact same thing. And so what do you do with something like that? And when the Kandahar giant thing came out, you and I did a show on that.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh my God, this is exactly what these guys same in Alaska thing again. Were almost identical to what they were saying in Alaska.
And then you look at the story of the cave that the Paiutes had the giants in, and they built a little fire by the entrance to it and killed them all with smoke inhalation. Yeah. Again, they were talking about red-haired giants, giant cannibals in this case, but usually that gets tied into them. And according to the tribes out on the east, the mound builders had been there before they moved into the area, and again, these were red-haired giants, very unfriendly, ate people.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got these stories, modern and old, that are talking about the same thing. There's something to it. And that's how I got started on the whole mountain giant thing. I mean, John Green was the one that first really put his finger on it and went, there's something out here other than Bigfoot. I'm collecting reports on, I don't know what the heck these other things are, but really? I don't think it's Bigfoot.
I didn't know John Green did that.
Yep. And then the next person that picked up on it was Lauren Coleman. Him and Mark Hall did a book on it called... Two Giants, is Gigantopithecus Still Alive, where they took giant sightings from all over the world, ancient and modern, and put them all together and compile them. And it's still, it's a small book. I've got a copy of it right here. So if anybody wants to go check it out, there it is.
Nice.
And that's the,
Was John Green saying there were some, what, did he go into it?
He, from what I understand, I haven't actually read this. I had somebody else tell me about it. There wasn't a whole lot on it. It was just like, you know, I basically noticed that some of these reports don't fit in with the other ones, but they do fit in with each other, and I think there's something other than Bigfoot out there. And, you know, height was part of it, but also the tendency to get reports of them having, like, some kind of clothes on occasionally, using tools, things like that, that are just not Bigfoot. Bigfoot doesn't make a spear. I mean, he'll rip a branch off and stab something with it, but he isn't going to actually go to all the trouble of putting a broadhead on it or, you know, stone axe or something like that. He doesn't really need it. But again, you're talking about a critter that's like basically twice the height of a standard Sasquatch, and assuming we're even, that a lot of the Sasquatch people are seeing are sub-adults in the 7 to 8 foot range, that still means the adults are 9-10 foot. Well, if you're talking about something 15-18 feet tall, it's too big. Again, that's probably not a Sasquatch. You're talking about something else. So, you know, that's how these things end up happening. And because of me actually encountering a few of these stories completely unrelated and going, wait, what the hell is this? And you find them in all kinds of weird places. I found an article from an old Fate magazine from the 1950s. One of my friends copied it and sent it to me from the Netherlands to take a look at. And I went, oh, my God. They're talking about three things in Alaska here: Bigfoot, Wendigo, and mountain giants. And they even tell you what terrain they live in. And it's exactly the information I've been getting. I'd never seen this report before. Came out way before I was born. So, you know, this is a thing that when Wes says you get some weird report like that, store it away in the back of your mind. Absolutely, because you don't know. Maybe 20 years from now, you'll hear some other report that's almost identical and go, wait. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
And then when you start getting more and more and more of them, I just got contacted not too long ago to do kind of a realistic mock-up of what a Type 4 Bigfoot looks like, because that was what I saw in my first encounter. And the guy who contacted me had noticed that somebody else had an encounter 3 years later over on the western side of northern Minnesota. And 2 years after that, there was a whole rash of sightings from a Sioux reservation right on the border of Minnesota down by South Dakota. And so within 5 years, and all three during the winter, there had been these three different sightings of essentially the same thing that doesn't fit in with the typical descriptions of Bigfoot that he'd been getting from all over the place. So since apparently out of everybody, I was the closest one to it and got to see his face the best, contacted me and we did a mock-up of it. Now, as a result of this being done, somebody was on my group and saw this picture and put it on the Bigfoot Outlaws, and somebody on the Bigfoot Outlaws saw it and contacted me directly and went, oh my God, I've seen one of these things. It was in the 1970s, it was down in Tennessee, and it looked exactly the same except for it had short fur and the fur was brown. And I said, well, you saw Janosqua. That's the southern version. Same thing, except they got shorter fur and, you know, they're more reasonably colored for a southern climate. Not usually gray and white, like if you're going to live up in the subarctic all the time, like the Wendigo does. But the point here being that because I shared that information with somebody and they got a decent mock-up of this thing made, somebody else could ID it. And he told me when he contacted me, he said, I had a couple other Bigfoot encounters I was willing to share maybe with the show at some point, but I was never going to come forward with this one because no one would believe me. It's not the same as Bigfoot. Its behavior was different. It looked different. This thing was a friggin' monster. The regular Bigfoot, he doesn't think is a monster. This thing he thought was a monster. And again, getting back to the whole woo side of it, there's a lot more of that tied in with the Wendigo than there is with Type 1, 2, or 3. So at times I wonder if all Type 4s are possessed. You know, if they all have some kind of supernatural connection, getting back to the genetic thing, if they were made by somebody long ago in the past, well, maybe they just made more than one variety. I mean, we have more than one kind of dog. We've got toy poodles and we've got bull mastiffs. So what if a wood ape is a toy poodle and a Wendigo's a bull mastiff? See, we don't know. What were they made for? Some of them, you know, a regular type one would be a great laborer, maybe not as effective as a type four would be at being like a security type critter. So just don't know. We can speculate all day long, but we don't have enough info to back any of it up. Basically the point I'm trying to make. But getting back to your point, yeah, I mean, you can have some of these really strange stories related to you and think it's never going to relate to anything else. And then years later, you stumble on it and go, oh my God, this is like almost the identical thing. So I really love that about you, Wes, that you keep an open mind and you just let the cards fall where they may, the chips fall where they may. You know, as the information comes in, you absorb it and you correlate it to other information you've already got. And that's what you're basing your opinion on what Bigfoot is from moment to moment. And this is exactly the same way I deal with it. So I really appreciate that. I mean, to me, that's a scientific way of looking at it. As the data comes in, I'm going to modify my opinion appropriate to what the data says. You know, work strictly from the data set.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you saying that. It is one of those things to where it's kind of, you know, it's hard to know what to think anymore. I haven't been doing this that long. What's interesting is when you talk to guys who've been doing this for 20, 30, 40 years, their opinion really hasn't changed over 20, 30, 40 years. And that always shocks me because, you know, and I won't embarrass the guy, but there's a guy that's been researching this for like 30 plus years. And we were talking and I was telling him about eyewitnesses talking about Sasquatches using the palm of their hand and hitting a tree. And it sounds like a Louisville Slugger. Yeah, hitting the side of a tree. And I said, it wasn't just one witness I've heard that from. I've heard that from multiple witnesses that I've actually physically seen these things do it. Then I said, it makes more sense than Sasquatch walking around with a stick in its hand or a rock in its hand. You and I both know most sticks you pick up in the forest, if you hit a tree with it, that stick breaks. You don't quite get the right sound. You got to have the right stick, the right tree to get the right sound. And what amazed me is he had never considered that. He was blown away by that. And I thought, wow, you've been doing this for how many years? And you've never heard that before?
Yeah.
And I sent him like three or four episodes that I could think of off the top of my head where witnesses had described that. And so, you get so much more from witnesses than you ever would from reading a book or going to a lecture or hearing some of these guys talk. And that's why I love what I do. I'd like to expand it out beyond Bigfoot, as you and I were talking about, like monsters in the shadow. Even humans can be monsters. Yep. And there's a lot of cool topics to tackle outside of Bigfoot that I would like to tackle because, you know, unless I'm going to do encounter stories for the next 10 years, you know what I mean?
It's a lot more fun. There's a lot more different things to talk about when you've got that sort of variety. I mean, you know, as far as monsters go, some of the worst ones ever have definitely been humans. So
I agree.
And then there's the ones that are like partway in between. Like if you talk to the Navajos and the skinwalkers, well, they're talking about werewolves essentially. It looks like a human, and then the next minute it's a werewolf.
Yeah,
that's a skinwalker. You know, so. Some really creepy stuff out there, and the more you find out about Bigfoot, the more you start unfortunately finding out about some of the stuff that's sidereal to it, and you start going, well, now I'm talking to this tribal elder and he's telling me all this stuff about Bigfoot that I've already verified on my own, so I think he's got all this stuff right. And then he goes off on some tangent about little people and thunderbirds, and you're like, oh my God, what the hell else is out there, you know? So it's better to not close your mind completely. It's better to listen to what everybody has to say and just take it with a grain of salt. Don't call them crazy because, you know what, at some point you may find out that they weren't crazy, they were right, and they weren't pulling your leg.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the amount of people who are crazy, when I say crazy, I tend to think more of like some egomaniac, and you find that a lot in the Bigfoot world. And I don't think most of my audience is in the Bigfoot world, so they don't care, so I rarely ever talk about it. But as far as actual crazy people that have had encounters, they're pretty slim to none. I haven't come across too many people where I thought, wow, that guy's insane. I mean, there have been a few where I've been like, that guy's insane. But I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would say 99.9% of everyone is very sincere. And they'll tell you exactly what they saw. It's like the Christmas show where I had the guy on from Oregon that saw the little green man run to a he thought it was a 55-gallon drum, and it ended up being something else. And you know, this guy had never shared it with anyone, and this was probably 50 years ago he saw this. And he describes it to a T. He talks about what its face looked like, what emotions it had on its face, what expressions it made. And it shook this guy up. Still shook him up to this day. And I aired that one because I was so interested in it. I was like, well, it's not Bigfoot related, but it's my show. I can do whatever I want. So people listen to it. So I brought him on the air. But it was one of the most non-Bigfoot related encounter stories. I was so fascinated. I talked to this guy the day before I aired that show, and I was just fascinated by it. I mean, he was still shook up to this day on what he saw, and it still bothered him to this day. And, you know, everyone has something to talk about in their life. Human beings are, it's like you and I were talking the other day. I'm sure it seems odd to some people, but if I see a homeless guy, I'll buy food, give him money, and I'll sit down and talk with him, you know, treat him like I would anyone else. Mm-hmm. And you hear some of the most fascinating stories out of people's lives. And, you know, I would love to try to capture that and create a show based on that and put that out there, because I'm just fascinated with people and their experiences through their lives. And like I said, there's so much I haven't aired on the show. Mm-hmm. So many witnesses I've talked to where I thought, God, almost on a weekly basis, I'm just like, God, I wish that person would come on the show. That was probably the most fascinating thing I ever heard.
It doesn't have to be exclusively Bigfoot related in order to be interesting. Two of the most interesting stories that you've had on your show weren't Bigfoot. One of them was the Border Patrol guy who ran into the what looked like an airman in World War II uniform walking along that gave him the evil leer. And then the other one was the guy who was on the mountains with his cousin, and they ran into the guy in overalls with a tail that was running cartoonishly fast in a circle. Now, and that is like one of the creepiest things I have ever heard, and it has nothing to do with Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But that story creeped the hell out of me and still does. There's something about it that just, I don't know what it is, but there's something about it that just brings true, like, this was evil and supernatural, and good thing they got the hell out of there, because that was really not normal, and they were in the wrong damn place.
Yeah. Well, it's like the two brothers that talk about the woman in white. That always creeps me out. Every time I think about it or retell that story, it just creeps me out, because they're not religious guys by any means. I know that for a fact. And that whole, you know, so you're right. I guess I'm rambling, but it is. Some of the most interesting stuff isn't Bigfoot related, that's for sure.
Yeah. And this is, you know, why me and Wes will occasionally say, well, it could have been Bigfoot. Maybe it wasn't Bigfoot. It could have been a forest demon. And everybody's like, ha, 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 forest demons. Whoa, wait a minute. What's so funny about a forest demon? Where does it say in the holy books that demons had to live in buildings? Okay. Where does it say that? They can be anywhere. They can be it can be a glacier demon. It can be an underground demon. It could be living in an old deserted building demon. They can go wherever they want to. Unless it's holy ground, then they're in. A little bit restricted to being there, but just keep an open mind. It doesn't necessarily always have to be just one possibility doing something. I mean, you know, Wes could probably list off a list of cryptids half as long as his arm that are remotely possible to actually exist, and I could do the same thing. You know, like I say, I can say five possible subvarieties of Bigfoot, little people, direwolves and Ice Age bears. If I was going to throw all my names into the hat for cryptids that I think are still around, there's 10 right there.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder where are these cryptids coming from? Mm-hmm. You know, where are they? I'll tell you an interesting story. So I talked to this old man one time, and he didn't want to come on the show. And he started telling me the story about these little people, and asked he was very cautious on how he approached it with me, until I think he figured out that I wasn't going to laugh at him, that I was all ears and I wanted to hear the story. And he was telling me the story about, this must have been back, I want to say in the 60s, he had purchased a home out in the middle of nowhere. And it was an old homestead home. And the home was built like in the 1800s. And so they lived in the middle of nowhere, but also on this property.
Can you remember what state it was in?
This was down in the South.
Okay.
One of the, next to his home was an even older home. And it was built, I think, in the 1700s. And it was basically falling apart. There wasn't much left of this place. But there was enough. He wanted to make a shop out of it. So his son comes to him one day and says that the little people are bothering him in the forest. And the dad's like, well, my son obviously has a, you know, wild imagination. He's talking about these little people bothering him.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid wouldn't let up. And he kept saying the little people bother him. He was like, Dad, every time I go out in the forest, they won't leave me alone. And so his dad's like, okay, well, what do they look like? You know, he's just playing along like, okay, well, right. What did you see?
Yeah.
You know, somewhat condescending to the kid. But the kid describes what he saw to a T. I mean, description like you wouldn't believe from head to toe and what he saw. And so the dad's like, well, okay, they won't bother you anymore. Blah, blah. You know, he just kind of brushes it off. Mm-hmm. And the father was saying his wife was complaining animals were on the roof, and their horses wouldn't go into the barn. They refused to go into the barn, and he said the barn always stunk, but he could never figure out why it stunk so bad. But it always just stunk. He thought it was just old. And so one day, it's getting late. They're wrapping up dinner. And he had this big, huge bay window in his the backside of his house. And his son starts going off again about seeing the little people. And he's like, okay, I've heard enough. And his son points to the window and goes, they're right there. And so he turns around, and he said he had this old water spigot going up right next to the window. And he said what he saw was a thing about 3 feet tall. It looked very human-like in the face, was proportioned mm-hmm. very human-like in the body. It was hairy. And he said, as he looked over, he said this thing appeared to be like chattering to ones below. He never saw the ones below, but it appeared to be chattering to the ones below. And he said it looked up and made eye contact with them. And he said there was almost no whites to the eye. He said the eyes were very... especially from the light coming in from outside the kitchen shining out, he said the eyes almost had an animalistic, like a deer or something like that.
Glow.
Kind of a glow, yeah. But he said that he doesn't remember seeing any whites to the eye. And he said he's only within feet of this thing, separated by this huge window. And he said it kind of leaned way back, and its eyes got real big. And he said it had this look on its face like, oh, crap. And it just dropped. And he said that's the last time he ever saw it. But what's interesting about this whole encounter thing, the dad's like, I don't know what it was. He was like, he's like, listen, I don't do drugs. I wasn't drinking. You know, he's giving me the breakdown most people give me. And I'm like, no, I believe you. And he goes, so I go out to the barn the next day, and I'm looking around in the barn. And he goes, out there in the barn, I noticed a rock pile in the very back of the barn. And he goes, I started removing the rocks. And he goes, it opened up to a hole. And down below his barn and his whole property is caverns.
Whoa.
Excuse me. He wasn't aware of this. And he said when he pulled all the rocks back, he said this black soot came up. And he goes, that's where the stink was coming from. That's why the barn stunk so bad. And when he removed the rocks, it was 100 times what it was before. And he said that, he goes, the other thing, he goes, about a month later, he goes, my son hadn't talked about him anymore. He goes, and I didn't want to talk about him anymore. And he goes, I don't know what, to this day, he goes, I don't know what it was. But he goes, I'm out there, and the other house that was built in the 1700s that's falling apart, the whole basement was full of rocks. And so he was pulling the rocks out of there, and he said he was going to turn it into a place for his tools.
Right.
And he said his neighbor comes by, and he goes, when I say my neighbor, he goes, I probably lived 10 acres away from this guy, 15 acres away. And he pulled into my yard and asked me what I was doing. And I said, well, I'm pulling all the rocks out of this old building. I'm going to try and fix it up, put my tools in it.
Right.
And the neighbor said, you can't pull that out. That's where the dwarves live. Or dwarf. That's where the dwarves live. And he kind of looked at him, and he was like, well, what do you, and he goes, I had seen it. I knew what he was saying, but I didn't want to acknowledge it.
Right.
And he said the neighbor just got back in his car and drove off. And he said that the hole underneath is full of caverns. Everyone in the general area has seen these little things before. And it was just a fascinating encounter. But here's another guy that doesn't want to come on the air and talk about it. But he talks about the face. He talks about the teeth. He talked about their hands. He talked about what they looked like. And the description he talks about with the emotions of it, its eyes getting really big and its head kind of going back. And the look of, oh, crap, on its face.
Damn, busted a human.
But he was asking me, he was like, you know, do you think it was just a baby Sasquatch? And I was like, I don't think so, man. I don't.
Yeah.
The Native Americans talk about little people. So we talked a little bit about that. I'm sorry I was long-winded on that. But that's a perfect example of someone that's experienced something that doesn't want to come on the air because he could – to this day, he doesn't know what he saw. He doesn't – he doesn't say little people. He doesn't even say dwarves. He just says, I don't know what it was. You know, I can tell you what it wasn't, and that's about it.
It's really frustrating when you get reports like that, too. You know, not so much that you can't put it on your show. It's just like you don't know what to tell them or where to go with that. You know, I'm sorry. I just don't know that much about the little people. I can't tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You know? You know, if being me, I'd probably be moving somewhere else that didn't have a cavern full of dwarves right underneath the house.
They moved right after that. He told me they moved right after that. But he said he didn't know. The only thing he thought was it was demons. He was like, I don't know what else to say it was. He goes, it looked very, very much flesh and blood. And he goes, it wasn't. And we got to talking about, because he, you know, being an older guy, he grew up in the era of the space race and the little Martian people.
Right.
And at first he was like, I thought it was little Martians. And he was like, I don't know what else it was, you know?
You know, and again, that's a good point on how, you know, your background colors your perception. Oh,
absolutely.
You know, at the time that was sort of the thing that people, they see some little guy automatically, they think it's some little green guy from Mars, it's a Martian. So that's what pops into his mind. Well, it's teeny and short. Must be a little Martian. He's not thinking Bigfoot. He's not thinking little people or leprechauns. Or he's a Martian, you know?
Yeah.
So this again, puts another layer on top of the stuff that we have to deal with all the time when we're talking to somebody about their encounter. What they perceive it to be and what it probably actually was might not be the same thing. And sometimes, you know, you get these people that have had – like a great sighting, but they're not that good of a speaker. They don't have that big of a vocabulary. So they'll use the word that they know, but that isn't exactly what they should be using to describe it. And it will sort of tend to mislead people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's too bad, too, because people are so nasty. I had a guy one time who, God, the guy had such a great encounter. But he had a stutter. And it didn't bother me one bit. I mean, the guy's encounter was amazing, but he didn't want to come on the air because he would stutter. He had a hard time speaking.
Right.
But he had one of the most amazing encounters, and he was like, he's so worried, not so much that people wouldn't believe him, because he's like, I don't care if people believe me or not.
Right.
I'm just telling you what I saw. He goes,
he just didn't want to get the ridicule because he had a speech problem.
Exactly.
And, and that poor guy, my heart goes out to him. That's so damn horrible that people are like that.
Yeah.
Craptacular world that we live in. You know, I've had people that I've known that have had speech problems too. And you know, a couple of them actually worked their way through them, which was spectacular. They had brain injuries and they managed to recover completely and got their normal way of speaking back again. But it took them a couple, 2-3 years, you know, in both cases. So
yeah,
my heart really goes out to people that have to deal with something like that their whole lives. That's really tough. Well, is there anything else that you want to mention before we get it going here, Wes? I'm glad I got you on the show and got you to mention some of your insight, your take on this whole thing. If I was to pin you down right now and give you the question and say, Wes, what do you think Bigfoot is? What would you tell me right now that you think Bigfoot is?
I'd say we're having technical issues.
There is no wrong answer.
No, I know. My answer would be, I don't know. My answer would be, I really don't know. I think there is... Here's the thing that bothers me about the Bigfoot thing. Why is it when you walk into the forest, and these and people who've had encounters know exactly what I'm talking about. Probably 90% of the audience will have no clue what I'm about to say. But why is it after you have an encounter, you can walk into an area and you can almost sense that they're in the area, or you can sense that they're not in the area. Mm-hmm. And unless you've had an encounter, it's really hard for people to understand that. But why is that? That's not natural. No. I can't tell you if a bear's in the area. I can't tell you if a cougar's in the area. I can't even tell you if a human's in the area unless he's making noise. I don't sense things like that. And why is it with these things you can sense? And the other thing, too, is why is it the forest goes dead silent? Even the insects. I can understand your prey quieting down. I can understand, you know, I'm not an unreasonable man. I can understand a lot of things, but really the insects, everything goes dead silent. And so it seems very unnatural to me what these things are and their ability to, you know, like I said, they're on every continent. Well, why is it being covered up? You know, I would hope some Russian guy in Russia would shoot one of these things and bring it in, because if it's going to happen anywhere, it's probably going to happen there.
Hear that, Igor?
Yeah. But I guess to my answer would be, it's obviously a primate of some sort, but I think there's more to it. I think it is a wild animal, but I'm not. I won't say there's something more to. There's definitely something more to it than just a simple primate. There's more going on here than it just being a simple primate. And when I had those brothers on, and they were talking about these things being empty vessels, and they were describing some of the different things. I won't bore you with it, but it made me really stop and go, God, I hope they're not right. I really hope they're not right. Beyond this thing coming out and having disclosure, nothing more would bring me joy in the government saying it's an ape. That would bring me so much joy in them saying that. I don't think that's going to be the case. And I've heard too many odd, strange things related to these creatures that there's something more to it than just, you know, the other thing too is that they'll seem to move in on you right up until the point of attacking you. And then 99.9% of the time they'll back off, which makes no sense at all. Makes absolutely no sense. If it was a bear or it was a cougar or even a human, and they're going to come up and be right on the edge of attacking you and then back off, that makes no sense. To me, it makes no sense. And I guess to answer your question, I would say I don't know, but I definitely think there's more going on here than just a simple ape running around. There's more to the story. And some of the stuff, you know, you hear like government insiders, and then you got to weed through, well, are they feeding me false information? Are they feeding me? And so, you know, you get that from all different sides. But the bulk of the picture of what we're looking at is an unknown primate. But that's not to say there's more to the story. There's a lot more to the story than just an unknown primate. And I worry, too. You brought up the Nephilim. I worry, too, about that. Because, they say as in the days of Noah, so well, should, you know, we'll be in the Son of Man, the coming of the Son of Man, or the end of days. Right. And I'm a student, you know, I'm very much amateur. I'm not a professional on anything, but I've read the Sumerian texts. I've read the apocryphal texts. And what's interesting is when you start reading some of that stuff, a lot of it sounds like modern day encounters. I mean, they were running into weird creatures back during the flood, pre-flood. They were running into they even have, I was reading, and I should post it to the website. I'll probably end up getting beat up on this, but Because anytime I go down this road, I always end up getting beat up. But there, if you listen to some of the encounters like the Sumerians were talking about, it sounds like modern day dogman encounters. They even have some that sound like modern day Sasquatch encounters. And it almost sounds like they were running into the same problem we were. No one really knew what they were, where they came from. And I just don't think the days of this being some non-human primate and the government's covering it up because of the spotted owl and because of lumber, I don't believe that for 2 seconds. I think that's a bunch of hogwash, if you want my honest opinion.
No, I totally agree with you. I don't buy into that either. I think there's more to them than being just a clever wood ape. And for those that think they are just clever wood apes, then how come we don't have a corpse? If they're just a clever wood ape, we should have been able to shoot one and had a corpse by now. I mean, it took us a long time to actually shoot a gorilla and bring one in, but we did it. It took us a long time to actually shoot a chimp in, and we did it. You know,
well,
and we should be able to do it with Bigfoot. I mean, they're, you know, their area that they're hiding in is no more enormous than the areas in Africa where these other primates had to hide. So if they're just an ordinary primate, why haven't we bumped one off? And you can forget about the fossil record, because all we've got from the fossil record to prove that the chimpanzee exists is part of a jawbone with 4 teeth in it, and we've got nothing from the gorilla. So forget about there being any fossil evidence. We don't have fossil evidence for the apes that do exist, that we know for a fact exist. So you're not going to be looking for fossil evidence to find Bigfoot. You're going to have to find a nice, fresh corpse.
Well, and I do think that they're flesh and blood, because why cover up something that is a ghost? What's the point of covering it up? And so you'd only cover it up if it is flesh and blood, and there was something to kill, and there was something to prove that they exist. Otherwise, why cover it up? If it's just something paranormal, as most people think, or some people think, and some people say, then why cover it up? You're never going to prove a ghost exists unless you go play with a Ouija board. Then you'll find out really quick that demons do exist. But, you know, prior to that, I mean, with regard to Sasquatch, it has to be flesh and blood. Otherwise, why cover it up?
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, actually, I was on the subject of mountain giants with somebody that used to work for the government. And they were on a mission in an area, I cannot disclose where it was exactly, but it was an area where there apparently was a mountain giant, and they were briefed on the possibility of running into this thing during the course of the mission that they were taking care of.
Was that in Afghanistan? And
no, it was not in Afghanistan. But the thing that really that got my attention is the person was, I said, well, they weren't just like kidding around or anything, and they go, look, they don't give you briefings on things that don't exist,
right?
So that was pretty much the end of the discussion on that one, as far as I was concerned. You're really, really serious here. You're not just joking around. They don't give you briefings on things that don't exist.
I've talked to soldiers who were in Afghanistan, and they talk about seeing these mountain giants and being very open about it. And they would have to report anything odd or anything strange to the superiors. And so they would report seeing these things. He said over in Afghanistan, there is, if you notice, most of the villages are away from the mountains. And he goes, that's intentional. And I said, why is that intentional? He said, because these things live up in the mountains. And when he was over in Afghanistan, he laughed at it. He was like, oh, come on. And the village people were very sincere about it. They were like, well, we don't go up to the mountains. We stay away from that area. There are cannibals up there. And he said that after being there for a couple months, he would see these things. Like, he'd be in a helicopter with a FLIR or night vision, and he'd see these things come down from the mountain and then run across a plain. And he said, Wes, they ran like cheetahs. Mm-hmm. And he goes, but there were full-grown men. And he goes, some of them were 13 to 16 feet tall. And they would report it. They would report these things to the superiors, and he said no one ever did anything about it, so they just kind of quit reporting it. But again, that's another anecdotal story, but what do you do with that, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's an example. I just mentioned this earlier. I was talking about my friend over in the Netherlands copying an old story from Fate magazine from the 1950s and sending it to me. This is from 60 years ago. We're talking about something that just happened now over in Afghanistan, and the giants live up in the mountains. Okay, so in this Fate magazine article, and this is based on the Inuit people, the Eskimos, telling the people that wrote the article what the deal was with their local cryptids. And they said, well, in the swamps and down in the lower areas, you've got your Bigfoot-type critter. And if you go up into where the rocky lower parts of the mountains are, that's where the Wendigo lives. They like to live in the rocky areas. And nobody goes up into the high mountains because that's where the giants live.
Yeah.
So how did they get the same notion on the exact opposite side of the damn planet up by the North Pole? But that's where the giants live. A little convenient for happenstance, don't you think?
Yeah, a little terrifying, that's for sure.
But see, that's the point we're making, and apparently we're hitting it over and over again on this show, is that just because it's some strange story that doesn't fit with what you know already, don't discard it immediately, because you might find something that's going to connect to it at some point in the future. And it's all part of this big, weird picture that we're working on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, anyway, Wes, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here on the show. Is there anything else that you'd like to bring up or talk about? Well, you've got a chance. This is your floor right now. You can take it away, brother. I know you mentioned that you want to do a Monsters in the Shadows type show. Wes has already asked me if I'd be interested, and I am. If he wants to do the show, I'll help him with it. So, you know, maybe that's something that you'll see here in the near future. You guys can give us some feedback on it on this video when you're checking it out. Post some comments underneath. Tell us what you think about that idea. I think it'd be a lot of fun, personally. And it'd be a smorgasbord of monsters instead of just Bigfoot every time. You wouldn't know what you were going to be getting.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that fascinate me. Like Nimrod fascinates me. The Third Reich fascinate me. And not in a good way. But, you know, and there's a lot of monsters in this world. And, you know, when you really look at some of the backstory on some of these bad things that go on, it's fascinating. It's very fascinating to me. So, no, I don't really have anything to add to it, man. Thanks so much for having me on and putting up with me. And I appreciate you very much, Duke. And thank you again.
Oh, you're very welcome, Wes. The honor was all mine. It was a pleasure to have you on my show. And glad I could be the one that would give you a chance to have a little bit of a platform to actually talk outside of your own show about some of this stuff where you're not going to get ripped on by your members because you're taking away from their regular Bigfoot content by talking about Bigfoot. So,
yeah.
I love you guys. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back soon with another one. Thanks, y'all, for listening in, and check it out again next time. Until then, God bless, take care, and have a great week.
And that was my interview with Duke. Duke, thank you again for interviewing me. And again, check out World Bigfoot Radio or go to YouTube, type in Brian Sullivan. You'll find his channel. Subscribe. And as always, if you guys have had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Until next time, everyone. Something quieter.